I'm very proud to welcome Claudia M. from Mesa, Arizona. Claudia.
Thank you so much, Kim. Thanks for asking me to speak, and thanks, District 14. I think it's wonderful. You're at the last few days of your service, and there's nobody crying, and there's nobody laughing like on camera. That's terrific. So, Kim, you're awesome to work with. I really appreciate you. My name is Claudia. I'm a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of the Al-Anon Family Groups, including Alateen. And I didn't know how I was going to start, and I got a nudge, and I'm really pleased with this nudge. It's from page 171 of As We Understood, and it's one of my favorite stories, and it illustrates one of the reasons why I'll always come back. It says, while watering the trees one afternoon, I used the most water on a tree that had died the year before. I was trying so hard to revive it. My son came out and asked, Mother, why are you wasting so much of that precious stuff on that tree? God's the only one who could help it now. At that moment, that tree was my husband, just as plain as day, and I had been wasting all my precious stuff on him and his drinking when God was the only one who could help him now. For the first time, I finally understood release. What a blessing that has been. And that's from an author in Texas. So I love progress, but I hate change. And I also hate letting go. So I'm going to tell you a story. I wish it was a story prior to Al-Anon, or at least more dated than it is. Back when people did their nails, or back when I did my nails, I had a nail technician, and she wasn't that great, and she didn't speak English very well, so often I would leave with nails that were nothing like I intended them to be. And her price wasn't very good, but, you know, I'm a loyal person. And one time I drove up to her little shop, and I was so thrilled to find out that she had sold the business. I guess it just didn't occur to me. I could quit going. And that's the way I've handled habits. A friend of mine says it's not an old habit if you're still doing it. That's the way I've handled boyfriends. That's the way I've handled friends. It's just easier to keep doing what I've done, even though in Al-Anon, I've learned that I'll keep getting what I've always got. So for me, my work in Al-Anon has been about releasing, situations, experiences, old habits, people, some people that needed to be released for my benefit, some that needed to be released for their benefit, and some that I still have an argument about. But my life has changed so much because of Al-Anon and because of the work that I've done here. You know, if I had really been listening at that first meeting and I had understood when they read the 12th step, that all I was going to get from every meeting I ever went to, every sponsor I ever had to retrain, every journal I filled up, every thought and every tear, and all I would get out of it was a stupid spiritual awakening, I would have walked out the door. But I didn't know what a spiritual awakening was. I thought a spiritual awakening when I was growing up was when my mother lifted the wooden paddle from the wall. That was a spiritual awakening. They had a paddle and it said for the little deer with the bear behind. And a lot of my habits, a lot of my ideas came from growing up in that house. And a lot of the things that I later learned to call shortcomings were defense mechanisms. They kept me alive. They kept me somewhat healthy. And they worked for a long time. My dad, I don't know, he never admitted his alcoholism, but if it waddles like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it might be a duck. And he was a duck. My mom was very irritated that my dad was a duck, and she was very angry. And it's kind of funny because today I watch, there were five kids in our family. There were six, one passed as an infant, but all five kids argue about who's most like mom. We don't mind being like the alcoholic, but we don't want to be like my mom. So there was a lot of anger in my house. There was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of not feeling safe, not being safe. And there were a lot of rules. And some of the rules, we got to know what they were, and some we did not. I learned about my parents, my mother's higher power, and I learned that he loved me no matter what, but that if I didn't behave, I was going to go to hell. So that was very confusing. And I spent most of my time trying to figure out what it was you wanted, because I knew that if you loved me, I would be okay. And I spent a lot of years believing that if you were okay, I was okay. And it didn't work for me, but I didn't realize, just like that nail technician, I did not realize it wasn't working for me. So I kept doing the same thing over and over and over. And I went to college when I was 17 or 18. It was 500 miles away from home. I was so excited. I was going to quit trying to please you and do everything you wanted me to do. And I was going to be who I wanted to be. And that lasted 3 hours until I met my first him. And I knew that he would love me if. And I did that almost my whole life. I didn't realize until a lot of fourth steps that while I was looking to you and while I was trying to be who you wanted me to be, I was also insisting that you were who I needed you to be. Nobody seemed like they were happy. I knew I wasn't. So I kept doing it. And when I was 32, I found out, at least at that moment, I thought I found out what love was. A nurse put a baby in my arms, and I looked down at that baby, and for the first time in my life, I looked at somebody and they were exactly who they needed to be. They were perfect. And the way that baby looked at me, I knew that I was just exactly what I needed to be. And I've heard in AA speaker meetings or open meetings, you know, they often describe taking that first drink and then trying to replicate that feeling of being okay all of a sudden. And maybe that's what I was looking for. I was looking to be okay, and I was looking to love you, and I was looking to be loved by you. And I couldn't get there. For a long time, I couldn't get there. So I'm going to talk a little bit about releasing. I had been in Al-Anon for a while, in 2016. And my son that I loved with my whole heart was going downhill fast. And I knew that he wasn't going to make it. I knew that he wasn't going to make it. A friend of mine says that he's been in and around Al-Anon, and I tell this almost every time I tell my story. Sorry about that, but it's important to me. He says that being in or around Al-Anon is like being in or around a submarine. You do not know which you are until it dives. And on March 20th of 2017, my son took his life. And it dived. The thing that I feared most in the world happened to me. And it dived. And I found out I was in Al-Anon. I found out I was in because of the work I had done and all the sponsors I had had. I don't recommend having as many sponsors as I had, but you know, I outgrew them or whatever story I told myself. But I did a lot of work and I did a lot of service work and I showed up and I said yes, because I knew that it changed who I was. And when my son passed, the people I had come to love in Al-Anon had come to love me, and they surrounded me when I needed them to surround me. And they came and they sat on my couch, and for some reason they didn't say, only the good die young. You can have other kids. Well, I couldn't, but they just sat with me. And they listened to me when they thought I might need listening to. And they spoke to me and they said, tell me more about David. And I got through. Just like you told me, one day at a time, one breath at a time. I learned to ask myself a question I'd never learned before. I learned to say to myself, what do I need right now? Sometimes it was a glass of water, a hug, a meeting, a phone call, a nap. I found out that I could go to sleep and turn off the world for an hour. A lot of times it was a cookie or chocolate. It was 30 pounds of cookie or chocolate. I lost it. It's gone. I was buying chocolate at different pharmacies so they wouldn't know how much I was buying, because it worked for me. Temporarily, yeah. Somebody said, oh, that doesn't make you feel better. That only makes you feel different. Well, different was good enough for me, you know? And in Al-Anon, you taught me that if there's a problem, there's always a spiritual solution. I don't know anything much more spiritual than chocolate or whatever it was. I learned how to receive love in Al-Anon. I didn't know that when I came in. I didn't have much experience either giving or receiving love to anybody but my kid. One of the first times that I ever told my story, and I felt bulletproof after I told my story, I was standing up there and there was this long line. And you know, I don't know if you've told your story and somebody comes up to you and says, oh my God, I couldn't believe you said, and then they say something that you didn't even say and you're sure you didn't say it. And you know that there's a higher power that's always there at every meeting. And somehow what needs to get said, and what needs to get heard, gets heard. And there was this long line. And at first inside, I was sort of pushing you away because I couldn't take it in. I couldn't take in the love. And you kept coming because you always do. And a little by little, that wall came down. And by the middle of the line, I started taking in your care and your love and your compassion and your concern. And 5 years later, when my son passed, that wall was down. I had released whatever need I had to keep you out, you know? I don't know what I was afraid of. But I survived because I was here. I went to my first meeting when my son was 8 years old. The same year I quit smoking because of the smoke in the room. He didn't like it. And a lot of the things in my life that I have done because I loved my son more than I loved myself. And part of my journey is when my son passed, I had to learn to love Claudia. I had to learn to be my own best friend. I had to learn to look in the mirror. And I'd say that question my mother would ask me so often, who do you think you are? And I would look in the mirror, and I still do, and I say, who do you think you are? And I would smile. And I still can smile. Because of you, because you have helped me, you and my higher power have helped me become somebody that I'm proud to be. And I found out that almost everything is temporary, you know? If I'm having a good day, it's temporary. You better enjoy it. If I'm having a bad day, it's temporary. It'll be a good day tomorrow. But what's not temporary is that there's a bunch of people here who came because they know and love me, and they came to support me. And the truth is that the people I know and respect and admire and love in Al-Anon now know and respect and admire me. And I never thought that could be the case. I get to be who I am. So I came into my first meeting. My next door neighbor was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I guess I told him the truth. He was the first person I ever remember telling who I was, like the whole story. And I told him this story, and he went into the other room, and he came out with an Al-Anon meeting list, and he handed it to me, and he said, what can I say? Go. And I walked in, and somebody was nice to me. And as a result, I always make an effort to reach out when somebody's hurting or when somebody's new, because I remember. A friend of mine says that whenever there's a newcomer in the room, she thinks that there ought to be a hologram over every member's head showing exactly what they looked like at their first meeting, so that that newcomer could have hope. Because when I came into a meeting, I saw people who had it together, and I saw people whose person that drank too much was their mother rather than their father, or they were just different. And so even though that lady had been nice to me, I went back to my next door neighbor and I said, I can't learn anything from them. And he told me to go back and quit focusing on the differences and start focusing on the similarities. Pure advice, but he's from the other program, you know. And I'm so glad that he gave me that simple advice to focus on the similarities. And I went back and I heard the rage and the pain. And instead of trying to fit in, which I had done for 40 years or 40 years and change, I began to belong. And I would do a fourth step, and I would be afraid to share it with you. And you would nod like you'd been there, and I was pretty amazed that you had been there. And so I let out more and more and more and more, because I saw you, and I saw what happened in meetings when people let out more and more and more, and you didn't run away. You leaned in, and I needed you to lean in for me. And you taught me how to do that, sponsor by sponsor. And maybe that's why I've had so many sponsors, because I need to know that that many people could know who I was and love me anyway. Yesterday, I actually went through the concepts when I spoke. Just very briefly, and nobody left. I was amazed, but you, I'm not going to do that to you guys. I do try to look at the steps. I used to think that the steps were just sort of like, you know, I was just supposed to check off the boxes. You're done with step one, check. And it was a long time before I realized that with each step, I came to understand a spiritual principle that I had never been exposed to growing up. I did step one over and over and over. And a lot of times if a meeting was on step one, I'd say, I love 11 of the steps, and this ain't one of them. Because I hated the reminder that I was powerless. It's probably the same reason that I hated the serenity prayer. I hated the reminder that I'd have to accept the things I could not change. I was at a meeting this past weekend, and the topic was the serenity prayer, and somebody suggested putting the F-bomb in the serenity prayer. I haven't tried it yet, but I think it's got possibilities. The last time I did the first step, I don't know why, I did the same similar work. I read all the literature. I talked about it, wrote about it. I called different people. What was your experience? But this time I didn't see that I was powerless. For me today, step one is a step of power. All I have to do is let go of you. I have to quit watering dead trees. And all of a sudden, I have all this time and all this love and all this energy and all this insight and all this wisdom to give myself a life worth living. I didn't know that. I thought you had to do that for me. In step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And for me, step two is about evidence. All I have to do is look for evidence that I've got a higher power that's worth having. So I do the God box thing. And when I know that there's no way my higher power can help me out this time, I dump everything from my God box onto the top of my desk and I go through it one by one. After my son passed, I did that over and over and over again. And it built the faith that I had that maybe, just maybe, my higher power, who had come through for me this many times, you know, there's a pile this high, maybe he could come through for me again. And I had a blessing book, and I still do. And in my blessing book, I write down proof. I write down the date and I write down experience that I had. I was out of work when my son was about 10 years old. We were living on $300 a month, not very well. And my sponsor told me that, you know, what she did when she was in trouble was she made a deal with her higher power. 1 month, her higher power would take care of the mortgage and she would take care of the bills and then they would switch. And I did that and it worked. That was the year George Bush sent everybody $500 to stimulate the economy. And I was like, wow, you did it. Good job. And then came a Friday night meeting and I didn't have the mortgage and I didn't have the bills. And I cried all the way home from that meeting. And I pulled into my driveway and I said, I don't have the mortgage money and I don't have the bill money. You're going to have to do it all. And I just knew that I had let him down and that I felt shame because I couldn't do my part of the deal. And I got out of my car, I walked over to the mailbox, I pulled my mail out, and in the mailbox was a check for $1,700. Apparently, my son's dad in Illinois, the child support had been upped because it was below the legal minimum. And Illinois had been sending Arizona money for quite some time, and Arizona decided to hold on to that money until I could sit in my car and do a third step. So I didn't cash that check for a week because I had told my Friday meeting what was going on, and I needed to bring that check back to my Friday meeting and pass it around before I could cash it. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, could even restore me to serenity. A friend of mine says that the first time she felt serenity, she thought it was boredom. I get that. It wasn't part of my life. I started out with a story about releasing. And so you can imagine step three was not easy for me. That part about outcomes, you know, letting go of outcomes. I'm good with turning it over to God as long as he can guarantee me the outcome that I need to have. But time after time after time, my higher power proved to me that he would be there for me in unbelievably painful moments. And that I would always have, like, you know, the Rolling Stones say, what I needed. And it's getting easier. I started with red lights, just like my sponsor asked me to do. I started with the little stuff. In step four, I love to talk about myself. I had no problem the first time around, but the fifth step scared me to death. I did not want you to know who I was. And in my first 4 months, I had three sponsors through no fault of my own. The first two sponsors told me that I had worked the first three steps by walking into a meeting. I don't recommend that. So I started with a fourth and fifth step. I read sponsor number one, my first fifth step, or at least like a third of it. And she talked the whole time. She had never sponsored before. And she told me that she had never done this. She didn't know how to do this. I should probably find a sponsor that knew how to do this. But that she loved me and she gave me a big hug like she meant it. And then I went to sponsor number two and used the same fourth step and read the same fifth step and got hugged again and got sponsor number three when sponsor number two got married and moved out of town. See, some of it wasn't my fault. Happiness is knowing who to blame. And I got sponsor number 3 and I stuck with her for a while. But all I had to do was tweak that much used 5th step. And I told her again these terrible, unforgivable things that I had done. And she hugged me and she loved on me. And she said, been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. And I know today I needed to hear that repeatedly. The unforgivable sin was forgivable. I was forgivable. I was lovable. And that's been my journey in Al-Anon, to understand that you love me and you know me. In 6 and in 7, they're my favorite steps because for me, that's where the miracles really started happening. And the first few times I did a step 6, I said, okay, yeah, I want to get rid of them. That was my step 6. But now I look at what I think my character defects are. I write about what the payoff is for me. Why do I keep doing them? I write about the cost. And it's weird because it always seems like the payoff is the illusion of security, the illusion of control, something, the illusion of something. And the cost is always separation from you. And all I have ever needed is connection with you. So I ask my higher power, take what you want, take it when you want it. I don't care if you ever take it. I've heard that my higher power will take shortcomings from me when they're no longer any good to me or my higher power or others. And I know this is me making stuff up, but I know that my higher power hasn't taken judgment away from me yet, because you get so much amusement from it and you also get such a brilliant lesson on not to be like I am. Because judgment for me is one of those big separators. And in 8 and 9, I had to look at who I had harmed and I had to make it right. And I didn't even know that was possible. I made an amends to my mom and she yelled at me, told me I was hard, cold, told me a lot of things I didn't want to hear. But you had taught me just to shut up and listen. And I did. And my mom didn't change who she was, but I changed who I was. And it's encouraged to change. I think it's the algebra of recovery, where if A is me and B is you and C is our recovery, I can change our relationship. I can change C just by changing me. Who knew? And 3 days before my mom passed, she looked at me and she said, I don't want to lose you. And those were the first tender words I had ever heard from a woman who had never had Al-Anon and who needed it desperately, I think. From a woman who had never been taught that she was lovable, right? And in steps 8 and 9, I get to change who I am and I get to change who we are, who I am in relationship to you. Sometimes I get to assume goodwill and give you the benefit of the doubt. Last night I told a friend, well, I cried a little bit, but nobody noticed. And then I stepped away from the Zoom screen, went to the bathroom and saw the black all under my eyes. So 10, 11, and 12, I don't know why, but some people call them the maintenance step. And I don't want to stay where I am ever, right? I want to be bulletproof. And so I do 10 and 11 and 12. 10 every morning is roses, thorns, and buds. And because I always have to have rules, I have as many roses as I want. What good things happened yesterday? What good did I do? What beauty did I see? And then I only get one thorn, because that's plenty, really. Just something that didn't go my way. And buds, what am I looking forward to? What's my life? All the steps for me are about 11. All the steps for me are about connection with my higher power. But I didn't know about connection with my higher power until I learned about connection with you. I didn't know what connection was. And I used to have what I called a patio resentment. There were people in Step 11 meetings, and they would talk about how they sat on their patio and they read their literature for an hour and a half. Right? I mean, they were terrible. And I came over to the dark side and I started doing that, not on the patio, but I started making time for my higher power every single day, because I finally figured out my higher power was making time for me. Asking only for knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. I bust that all the time. I tell my higher power what it is my heart wants, what it is my heart needs. But most of the time, I understand that, like our literature says, the outcome is God's province. In 12, having had a spiritual awakening, I'm not the same person I was. For me, that's my spiritual awakening. The Claudia that existed a few years ago is not the same Claudia. I could not hold on to people who cared for me, and I could not let go of people who did not. One of the things that's changed a lot in my life in the past few years, I've been letting go of people who couldn't be there for me. A couple nights before I asked my husband to leave the house, we had been married for 12 years and I didn't like who I was with him, and I'm sure he didn't like who he was with me. My parents had been married 69 years. I thought that was the rules, you know? And you taught me about really looking at my life and accepting things exactly as they were instead of making it up. And about a few nights before I asked him to leave the house, he used to shower in the hallway, and I was having a bad David night, which just doesn't happen that often now. I mean, really bad. And I was sitting on the couch and I had David's ashes in my lap and there were tears rolling down my face. And my husband came out of the bathroom, down the hallway, into the kitchen. He stood 7 feet away from me with his glasses on, and he said good night and left. That had to be enough for me before Al-Anon, because that's all I was worth. And the love of you and the love of my son, which I still have, has taught me I can be my own best friend. I can look in the mirror and I can wink at Claudia. My sponsor years ago said, look in the mirror and smile at yourself. And I couldn't do it forever. I like me today, and that's because you first liked me, even after you knew who I was. So this Christmas was the first Christmas since my divorce is now pending. And it was the fourth Christmas since my son was passed. And it was a day of peace and a day of joy and a day of connection. Because I found out there's nothing this life can give me that doesn't have a solution, that doesn't have a spiritual solution. I had to let go of my kid's body, and I can't feed him lasagna anymore. But if I could figure out how, I will. But he's still in my life, and the love that I have for him, I will always, always have for him. And because I'm an Al-Anon, unfortunately, I have a lot of friends who have lost children and spouses and loved ones to the disease of alcoholism or car wrecks or whatever. And they have faced their grief with dignity, with courage, with meetings, with sponsors, with tears. And I've learned that every tear I shed is a tear that I'll never have to shed again. I am honored to serve as the delegate for Arizona. And it's been such a gift these last 3 years. And what I've learned was that maybe it's not my job to fix Arizona or to fix Al-Anon, dang it. But what I found out is that I can help fix Arizona. I can help fix Al-Anon. What I've learned is that it's like we're all in this great big basket underneath a hot air balloon. All I have to do is throw out a resentment or smile or do a gratitude list, and we all rise. We all rise. You lifted me up when I didn't want to breathe anymore. And I have found a life where I can have purpose and I can have joy. David taught me that, but so did you. I am more grateful to you all than I can ever tell you. And I don't know if I have more time, but I don't have more to say. Thank you very much. I love y'all.
Thank you, Claudia.
And you, Claudia. Thank you, Claudia. Love you. Thank you. You're awesome.